You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. It was a case that ignited the nation. Stanford swimmer Brock Turner, convicted of raping an unconscious woman behind an LA dumpster after a party. Prosecutors recommended a 6-year sentence, but the judge sentenced Turner to 6 months, reasoning a prison sentence would have a severe impact on him. Brock Turner was released from jail last month after serving just 3 months. He has registered as a sex offender and spends 3 years on probation. This case also highlighted the role men can play in combating sexual violence against women. Two men intervened to stop Turner's attack. They chased him down and they held him until police arrived. My next guest is on a mission to get more men fighting sexual assault against women. Robert Maverick-Odato is a sexual assault nurse examiner at a mid-Michigan hospital. Robert, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Your recent piece in the Huffington Post made such a good point that you say it's such a shame that the actions of those two men in the Brock Turner case are seen as heroic when we ought to see them as the norm. Why don't we see those actions as the norm?
That's a good question. I think that it really speaks to rape culture. And for those folks who don't know, rape culture, as I see it, is the glorification of male sexual violence that we see, you know, across the United States, across the world, mm-hmm. and that is done at the expense of women. So we blame women for it. So I think at face value, a lot of people don't really understand what that means, but I think it's probably best understood by way of example. And so we'll see rape culture and the questions that we ask. Why were you wearing that? What were you drinking? What were you thinking? What did you think was going to happen? What did you expect to happen? We see it in media reports, like the Stanford case where, you know, they highlighted alcohol consumption.
They did. There was a lot of discussion that she was drunk and unconscious. Is that a victim blaming thing?
Right. And that's central to rape cultures. We don't focus at all on men. We don't focus at all on their behaviors. We're blaming women. So women are to blame for their own assaults. And that's really what we see across the board. You see it, like I said, in the questions that we ask, in media reports. We see it in lenient court sentencing. And the crazy thing is with the Stanford one, we can almost hold that up as a victory for justice, and that's pretty incredible. Most rapists who are convicted or most rapists aren't even – they don't even go to trial. They aren't even convicted. They don't even serve any time. And so the fact that he served 3 months really speaks to the injustice that these victims undergo.
Tell us what you do as a sexual assault nurse examiner. What do you do?
So probably the best way to understand that is when someone is assaulted, they will say, go to the hospital. And so they tend to present to the emergency room, or they'll present to another clinic that has a sexual assault program. And there are often people on call, or there may be somebody there at the time. And so we see them – where I work, we see them in a separate room. We have medical advocates who come as well and work with them and sort of help with the psychosocial part of what they've just done, what they've just gone through. And we meet with them, and it's just one-on-one. And so that's really, you know, we want to cater to their needs. It's an underserved population.
But as you're doing this, at the same time, you need to collect evidence.
That's right. It's very difficult. And, you know, part of the training that we undergo is, you know, trauma-informed. And so right now, the emergency departments across the country aren't very well equipped to deal with these patients. They'll come in and they have very unique needs. They have just undergone something, or they've just gone through something that's been very traumatic. Mm-hmm. And they need care that right now the emergency departments just aren't set up for that. You need to have nurses who can devote plenty of time in there, or physicians who can devote plenty of time. There's a specific way to collect forensic evidence that doesn't tarnish it. And there's specific steps that we need to take to maintain the integrity of that evidence as well.
The title of your piece in the Huffington Post really caught my eye, Undoing Unawareness, How Men Can Help Fight Sexual Assault. Talk to us some more about the meaning of that phrase, undoing unawareness.
So as I went through this, and by this I mean by getting
your own
into,
journey.
Yeah, my own journey, exactly. It took a lot of reflection and, you know, I learned a lot from working and interacting with these patients, that when they came in, I kept seeing the same, kept hearing the same things, the victim blaming.
From the victim.
From the patients themselves, mm-hmm. exactly, that they came in and they mutter to themselves, they're not looking for sympathy. It's just part of as they're telling their stories, it begins to register with them and they begin to ask questions of themselves. What was I thinking? I knew better. I'll hear it from patients who say, nobody wanted me to come here. My girlfriend said it was my fault. Things like that. And so, I heard this with some frequency. And as I mentioned in the piece, I always knew that sexual assaults happened, but I had an inadequate appreciation for the full scope of the problem. Mm-hmm. I didn't fully appreciate the larger picture here, which is, that these women aren't to blame for what happened to them. And I think that, you know, most of us are born, and as males, you're just born into a culture where the script is written for you. I think a lot of women buy into the script as well in blaming themselves and blaming other women. But certainly for myself, I noticed that I had to unlearn some things. Even when patients talk to me, tell me some of the decisions that they made, I have to check my own thoughts. Why were you doing that? Didn't you know better? That kind of thing, which, you know, I've learned to check on myself, and I know that that's something where, you know, other men are experiencing the same thing, and I think they're sort of beholden to this false belief that women are to blame for their own assaults. So, really working with this population and seeing, you know, how broken they are, if you will, how emotionally vulnerable they are, and to see their humanity stolen. And for me, that was really quite profound to see, you know, to really appreciate their humanity by the loss of it, in a sense.
And here we are. It's the start of a new school year on campuses across the country,
absolutely.
The red zone. And what is the significance of that first 6 weeks of the new school year?
The red zone speaks to, it's the time when students are most at risk for being sexually assaulted. And so across the country, you'll see that emergency rooms will fill up, that more assaults are taking place. And I think you see it especially with incoming freshmen where they are vulnerable to being assaulted.
Have you seen this in your work?
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
You write this piece in the Huffington Post and you say, we can no longer deny the role men can play in combating sexual violence. So what is that role, especially here in this red zone as the school year starts? What can men do to combat this violence and change rape culture?
That's a good question. I think that I think on what it is that these patients want. And to their credit, I'm not sure what the right way to say it, but their expectations are quite low. They just want to be believed. And we can't even offer them that. They want to be treated with compassion. They want to be treated by a competent professional in a healthcare setting, in a courtroom setting. And I think that's important. I think just believing victims is an important start. Already about 95% of rape accusations are true. So I think we can start with that, mm-hmm. that most of them are true. And I think up until now, there hasn't been a whole lot of emphasis on the role that men can play. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's just been on what is it that women can do to prevent a rape from happening. And I think the discussions going into, you know, fraternity parties and Rush and all that stuff shape up very differently for women than they do for men. I imagine for women, and my wife can speak to this, that it's a buddy system and let's be safe, and their conversation just shapes up a little differently than it does for men, where it might be about tallies on a scoreboard and getting pictures and what is it that they can do to fulfill their conquests. And I think we need to change that conversation. I think we need to turn it on its head and get men to hold each other accountable. I met a prosecutor some time ago who talked about rape whistles, and feminists will laugh at rape whistles because they've often been used. You know, we give them to women to say, hey, if you think you're going to be raped, blow this whistle. But he said we should give them to men, go to fraternity parties and give them to men and say, hey, if you think you're going to rape this woman, blow this whistle, and your buddies, your bros will come and help you out. I think that's more of what we need. We need to take the focus away from women. What we find is that some of these tenets of rape culture, where she was asking for it, she drank too much, look what she was wearing, she was asking for it, things like that don't really hold up when you consider that toddlers are being sexually assaulted, elderly patients, disabled patients, people who aren't quote-unquote asking for it. And, of course, no one's asking for it. Women in burqas. And so the argument tends to fall apart when you consider, the full scope of the problem here.
Robert Mavrogordato is a sexual assault nurse examiner at a mid-Michigan hospital. You'll find his piece, Undoing Unawareness, at HuffingtonPost.com. Thank you so much for sharing these views with us, Robert.
Thank you for having me.